Daniel?
Welcome to the AcceleRx second quarter 2020 conference call. This call is being webcast live on the events page of the investor section of AcceleRx's website at accelerx.com. This call is the property of AcceleRx, and any recording, reproduction, or transmission of this call without the express written consent of AcceleRx is strictly prohibited. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. You may listen to a webcast replay of this call by going to the investor section of AcceleRx's website. I would now like to turn the conference over to Raffi Asadourian, AcceleRx Chief Financial Officer.
Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Earlier today, we announced our previously previewed second quarter 2020 financial results in a press release. This press release and the slide presentation accompanying this call are available in the investors section of our website. With me today are Vince Angotti, our Chief Executive Officer, and Dr. Pam Palmer, our Chief Medical Officer. Before we begin, I'll remind listeners that during this call, we will make forward-looking statements within the meaning of the federal securities laws. These forward-looking statements involve risks and uncertainties regarding the operations and future results of AcceleRx. Please refer to our press releases in addition to the company's periodic, current, and annual reports filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission for a discussion of the risks associated with such forward-looking statements. I'll now turn the call over to Vince.
Thank you, Raffi, and good afternoon, everyone. I hope you and your families are remaining safe and healthy, and we certainly appreciate you joining our call today. On today's call, we'll describe the progress we've made toward achieving our strategic objectives of 1, advancing the use of DSUVIA throughout the Department of Defense, 2, expanding our business in large customer channels through partnerships, 3, dedicating our internal sales team to the hospital and ambulatory surgery center settings, and 4, in-licensing or acquiring additional products. Objectives 1 and 2 allow for near-term growth without a significant AcceleRx commercial investment, while objectives 3 and 4 will take a bit more time but are expected to have a significant return. We've made solid progress both in the second quarter and more recently towards achieving these strategic objectives and building our foundation for growth despite the impacts from the COVID-19 pandemic. This progress is highlighted by our successful Milestone C approval in April that opens the door for purchases from the U.S. Army, as well as our recent distribution and promotion agreement with Zimmer Biomet for DSUVIA for the management of acute pain in adults during dental and oral surgeries. Now, as mentioned on our last call, in 2Q, we received Milestone C approval with the U.S. Army for DSUVIA's placement in all of the U.S. Army sets, kits, and outfits, or SKOs, associated with future deployments. This approval was the high case in our internal projections, with preliminary expectations that initial stocking orders from the U.S. Army SKOs alone will approximate $30 million over the next 3 years. We expect to know more about initial year orders for Army SKOs in the third quarter as the Department of Defense is going through its budgeting process for its fiscal year that begins on October 1st. In addition, the Department of Defense publicly communicated a notice of intent to contract for up to 12,200 boxes or 122,000 DSUVIA single-dose applicators, which we will expect to be ordered in the third quarter of this year after the request for proposal is issued and closed. Now, this is in addition to any SKO purchases, which we expect will begin in the fourth quarter of this year. We also anticipate DSUVIA to be approved on the Joint Deployment Formulary, or JDF, in the third quarter. This approval will be another significant milestone as it expands access to DSUVIA throughout the other branches of the military. And while the U.S. Army represents approximately 60% of the expected deployment opportunity, there's still a sizable market from the other military branches upon JDF approval. The JDF approval also expands the opportunity for purchases throughout the network of military treatment facilities, several of which have already adopted DeSuvia on formulary and are using it in various treatment settings. The DoD opportunity is one strong pillar that will support DeSuvia sales growth, which is attained with a small infrastructure of just a few account managers and is therefore a profitable avenue for growth. Similarly, we announced our exclusive promotion and distribution partnership with Zimmer Biomet for DeSuvia in the dental and oral surgery space outside the hospital setting. This partnership allows us to access the large dental and oral surgery market of an estimated 7.5 million annual procedures, importantly, without additional investments in our commercial infrastructure. Zimmer Biomet Dental Division is a leader in the dental implant space and has over 250 sales representatives with established relationships who regularly visit dental and oral surgery customers, which should accelerate DeSuvia's introduction, something we could not have done or attained without an entrenched partner. Importantly, the COVID restrictions in oral surgery offices have largely been lifted, allowing access for sales representatives. So we're very excited about the prospects of this strategic partnership, as is Zimmer Biomet, who believes DeSuvia will provide them with a differentiated offering from which dental and oral surgeons will greatly benefit. The training of the Zimmer Biomet dental sales representatives is currently being organized, and it will take time to cover the entire sales force, but we expect some initial benefits from this agreement in the fourth quarter this year, and we anticipate sales to pick up primarily in Q1 2021. As this is the second part of our strategic pillar that supports profitable revenue growth from a large specialized market with minimal AccelerX investment. Looking forward, we see similar opportunities where customers in large specialty markets outside the hospital and ASCs can be educated on the benefits of DeSuvia through companies that already have a presence in those spaces. Examples of such opportunities are plastic surgery procedures, fertility procedures and ambulance, and other emergency medical services. And unlike many hospital products such as anti-infectives or critical care products, DeSuvia provides a different value proposition in that it can be broadly used across many different medically supervised settings. Successful partnerships in these specialty market opportunities will strengthen the second pillar and support DeSuvia sales growth with minimal AccelerX investment. Our existing account managers remain focused on delivering long-term value from hospital and ambulatory surgery customers. These customer segments often take longer to penetrate due to lengthy review periods and complexities in P&T scheduling. We were slowed by COVID in the second quarter as access to hospitals and ASCs was restricted by states and institutions, each of which managed access differently. But recently, access has improved versus the March to June timeframe. And while restrictions still exist, we're seeing some recovery, highlighted by July being our largest month of demand by end users to date. During this time, we've also had some exciting hospital system wins, which we expect will provide some benefit in the fourth quarter as they begin to place orders after they incorporate DeSuvia into their protocols and medical information systems. One of these wins was a recent expansion to all hospitals within a system after initially being approved at just one location and with use limited to general surgery. After reviewing data from the initial trial use of DeSuvia, which illustrated both patient and economic benefits, the P&T committee reconvened and approved DeSuvia for formulary system-wide, including its associated ASCs, with expanded use to all settings within the hospital, including the trauma service. This is a perfect example of how we see DeSuvia being adopted. We continually hear from our physician customers about the benefits they observe in their patients with DeSuvia, and importantly, gathering the real-world data is key to demonstrating these advantages to other healthcare systems. In fact, we're excited that data providing evidence of these benefits will be published soon, including one manuscript that was recently accepted for publication in a peer-reviewed anesthesia journal. The economic benefits of DeSuvia to the hospital and the reduction in use of intravenous opioids and other medications will be evident from these upcoming publications. We expect this data to have a favorable impact commercially, as healthcare providers will finally have relevant, real-world data to illustrate why DSUVIA should be used over some current standards of care. As we've said before, the acceptance of DSUVIA onto formularies and eventual adoption into protocols is a process. But based on the real-world results from healthcare practitioners using DSUVIA, we remain confident DSUVIA will become a key treatment for the management of acute pain in medically supervised settings. Again, changing a standard of care takes time, but we believe healthcare professionals are just now beginning to realize the benefits. I'll now hand the call over to Rafi to take you through the financials.
Thank you, Vince. We continue to remain prudent with our cash as we launch DSUVIA. We ended the second quarter with $43.7 million in cash and short-term investments, which represents a change of $9 million from the first quarter of 2020. Our net cash outflow for the quarter was driven mainly by our $7.3 million of cash operating expenses, or combined R&D and SG&A expenses, excluding stock-based compensation, or $8.4 million, including stock comp. The operating expenses in the quarter included a net benefit of $0.5 million from the receipt of a breakup fee from the Tetraphase acquisition, net of expenses incurred related to the transaction in the quarter. This compared to $11.2 million of cash operating expenses in the second quarter of 2019, or $12.5 million, including stock-based compensation. The decrease in operating expenses in the second quarter of 2020 was primarily due to a reduction of $1.9 million in DSUVIA-related commercialization expenses and a $1.7 million reduction in personnel costs. We continue to focus on investing in the areas that will have the most positive impact on the launch and remain prudent in our overall cash spending. Revenues for the second quarter of 2020 were $2.9 million, compared to $0.9 million in the second quarter of 2019. Approximately $2.6 million of the revenue recognized in the second quarter of 2020 was attributable to the recognition of previously deferred revenues related to our collaboration agreement with Grünenthal. Our high-volume packaging line that is expected to be installed and operational at our contract manufacturer early next year has been delayed due to travel restrictions from COVID. We hope these restrictions will be eased later this year, paving the way for final acceptance of the equipment, which will significantly reduce our cost of production once commercial production is running on this line. To meet the timing of volume demands from the DoD as well as commercial customers, we are evaluating alternatives to accelerate final acceptance tests from the equipment manufacturer. Looking forward to the rest of the year, we are expecting an initial order from the DoD as indicated in their notice of intent to contract, which will be converted to an RFP for DSUVIA. In addition, an initial stocking order for Army sets, kits, and outfits is expected in the fourth quarter. We have reduced our 2020 quarterly cash operating expenses, which are now expected to range from $8 to $9 million, excluding stock-based compensation, or $9 to $10 million, including stock-based compensation, for the rest of the year. Finally, we remain in discussions with our potential out-licensing partner for DSUVIA in Europe and hope to have more to report here in the coming months. We are also in discussions with potential U.S. collaboration partners around marketing and distributing DSUVIA to other specialty markets, such as plastic surgery or fertility services in the U.S. In addition, we remain in active discussions on in-licensing and acquiring assets that are complementary to our existing portfolio with the potential to add significant value to the business. Finally, we are still evaluating the timing of our Zalviso NDA resubmission, which we delayed pending further guidance from the FDA regarding a potential new opioid product approval framework. We hope to have more details on these opportunities in the near future. With that, let me turn the call back over to Vince.
Thanks, Rafi. So to summarize, we have successfully built two foundational pillars for further profitable growth with the DoD and with the Zimmer Biomet Dental Partnership. Leveraging this success while continuing our push into the hospital and ASC markets, as we're able to demonstrate the economic and healthcare benefits of Vesuvia with real-world data, will generate long-term value for our shareholders. As you previously heard, the early feedback from the healthcare practitioners dosing Vesuvia is positive, and we look forward to the publications about the data showcasing Vesuvia in the perioperative setting. I'd now like to open the line up for any questions you might have. Operator?
Thank you. And we will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star and then one on your touch-tone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star and then two. At this time, we will pause for a moment to assemble our roster. Our first question today will come from Brandon Folkes of Cantor Fitzgerald. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for your questions and congratulations on all the progress in the quarter. Just three for me today. Firstly, could you just elaborate on the market opportunity for the Zimmer deal? I think you talked about 7 million procedures. How many of those procedures do you think are suitable for Vesuvia? And then currently, where are you seeing use in Vesuvia? Any new areas during the quarter placing orders or seeing use of the product? And then lastly, I'm going to ask the question. I know you sort of insinuated that you will update us down the line, but with the recent opioid approval, does this change your thinking on Zelviso, or what can you say at this stage? Thank you.
So I'm going to have Pam answer those questions. The first one is the Zimmer Biomet opportunity. Just in general, we said about 7.5 million procedures eligible for Vesuvia, but Pam, maybe you can give examples of what those procedures are.
Sure. Yeah. So third molar extractions, otherwise known as wisdom teeth extractions, dental implants, bone grafting. There's a number of dental and oral surgery procedures that are commonly performed by oral surgeons and dentists that use IV opioids, and we're really looking to replace IV opioids in that market.
And Brandon, so answering directly your question is all of those 7.5 million procedures are addressable Vesuvia procedures. It's not all dental and oral procedures. That's the estimate of what Vesuvia can be addressing.
And the second component of that question, Brandon, if recall, was where is Vesuvia currently being used? Again, I'll defer to Pam as she's been working with various specialists around the country.
Sure. Vesuvia is being used in ambulatory surgery settings. It's being used in procedural suites, adjacent to physicians' offices. It's being used in emergency rooms. So we're seeing a lot of Vesuvia use in short-term settings. Also, some interesting medically supervised settings, such as fertility clinics, which often have to do painful procedures and currently use IV opioids in that setting, they're finding Vesuvia to be a very nice, non-invasive alternative. We also are seeing oral surgery, typically, as well as some ENT procedures. So again, medically supervised settings covers a wide swath of medical specialties, and we're happy that they've seen the benefits of Vesuvia in each of those different areas.
Pam, can you also comment briefly on how you're seeing Vesuvia used in the short-term settings, in particular for the same-day surgeries and the timing of the dose and why?
Yeah, the majority of folks using Vesuvia now are giving it preoperatively, about 15 to 20 minutes prior to incision, as they know it takes 15 minutes to reach that sort of therapeutic concentration. And 90 to 95% of the time, they're using just a single dose. We know from our PK, as well as our clinical trials, that we get about 3 to 4 hours of analgesia with a single dose. And in those settings, that's really all they need. So it's looking like a very nice replacement for the IV injectable clear liquid opioids with just a single dose.
And I reiterate, beyond what Pam said, we're spending our time as a company with our resources in those short-term
or their same-day surgery settings within the hospital or ASCs. What Pam mentioned before regarding oral surgery, dental surgery use, there's plastic surgery use, there's fertility clinic use. Those other uses really help reinforce our strategy because they're large, they're diffused, they're not centralized. Our strategy to partner with others to penetrate those markets exactly as we did with Zimmer Biomet. That was component two of your question, Brandon. I think component three was Zalviso, and Pam, you can comment on that one as well as we're continuing to study the regulatory parameters.
Yeah, I think it's still early. We've not really had a definitive framework from the FDA yet on their evaluation of new opioid products. It's unclear whether, oltaserodine was approved under an old framework and sort of grandfathered in. And so we're really waiting for more clarity from the FDA and specifically the DAP division on a specified framework to, sort of evaluate new opioid submissions.
I think the good news in that approval is that they're clearly seeing and recognize the importance of opioids in these medically supervised settings, and that continues to give us comfort moving forward. Brandon, I hope that answered the three components of your question.
It does. Do you mind if I sneak one more? And I apologize, you just triggered something else. Just in terms of the feedback you received from physicians using the product, is the onset of action and duration of effects being reported in practice similar to what we saw in the clinical trials? And then that's it for me, I promise. Thank you.
Absolutely. The onset of action is very consistent. Again, the sublingual route of administration avoids the first pass effect that you, meaning it doesn't go to the stomach and then have to be absorbed and metabolized by the liver, which makes it very erratic onset. That's why oral opioid medications don't really work quickly or that consistently. So from a sublingual onset standpoint, it is very consistent. And the duration of action is interesting. It's actually a little bit longer than our clinical trial. We did not have a lot of multimodal analgesia. When you're going up against placebo, you try to keep those studies quite clean. So in the real-world setting, we've had reports that the duration of analgesia can even last beyond the 3 to 4 hours, and it has a very nice offset tail, meaning that it provides a very comfortable level of analgesia through to discharge with just that single dose.
Yeah, I think the general feedback beyond what Pam said is that it's absolutely delivering on the messages we've communicated, that onset, the duration. And as doctors have mastered their art with it, bringing it forward in these short-term surgeries and procedures has been the absolute key, bringing it forward meaning when they dose it. And they're timing the PK to the acute pain to really maximize the product. And it's really allowing them to use one dose, which I think has been the largest surprise to all of them.
And if I could add, I think one of the most remarkable things we hear about is the lack of side effects. In the PACU, the importance, time to discharge is sort of a composite measure. You have to have your adverse events under control, and you also have to have your pain under control to be discharged. So the thing that I love about, sort of time to PACU discharge is it really is a way to look at both and safety at the same time, as well as, making sure when I say safety, your patients, including your elderly patients, don't have any cognitive impairment, and that's a huge part. So one of the things we're hearing back in spades from the customers is that that preoperative dose is carrying them through the operation, through the PACU. Many times additional medications are not required at all, and they're able to discharge them more quickly because they do not have the side effects from the typical IV injectable opioids that they're often seeing.
Brandon?
Very helpful.
That helps.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question today will come from Michael Higgins of Ladenburg Thalmann. Please go ahead.
My questions have been asked. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question today will come from Evan Seigerman of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for taking my questions. A follow-up on the Zimmer Biomet deal. What feedback have you gotten from dentists regarding using the product in office? Are they comfortable storing it in kind of all the necessary infrastructure that they would have to have by having the opioids in stock. You know, I know that they do use various drugs in the office, but just add in another one. And then kind of you had mentioned business development. Any thoughts as to what you're looking for in terms of a target product profile or even more broadly speaking, you know, what type of patient population? How should we be thinking about that? Thank you so much.
Sure. Well, relating to the oral surgeon, so we've never marketed it to them. We sort of received a number of inbound queries when it first was approved because they saw the obvious benefits. We are only REMS certifying and supplying it to oral surgeons and IV sedation dentists. So that means they already have approval and already have the locked C2 storage and all the necessary oxygen and medications to treat respiratory depression due to opioids. So these are very savvy surgeons who already know how to use IV opioids, and they certainly see the advantage of a rapid onset and extended duration sublingual tablet that avoids them having to stop their procedure and redose their IV opioids, which they typically have to do multiple times throughout a procedure. So they clearly see the benefit. And that's, again, why, you know, Zimmer saw the benefit as well. They know these surgeries very well, and they know the benefit that a Suvia can use.
Yeah, and Evan, just to reiterate, why go with Zimmer, and we mentioned these other specialty markets. They're large markets, but we don't have a large enough sales force to penetrate like these partners have. As well as the relationships that they've built up compared to what we have. So we want to focus on the hospital ambulatory surgery center markets with the partners that are already in these. We're calling them specialty markets. They're specialty for us, but not for others. But with partners that are already in that space with established relationships and with large sales forces.
And that leads into, I think, the second component of your question, Evan, which was target product profile as we look at business development opportunities moving forward. So for us, the biggest key is efficiency, meaning, is the call patterns within these medically supervised settings where we currently deploy our resources. We want to keep them focused where they currently are. So whether it's the hospital or the ASC or the anesthesiologists in the office suites, et cetera, we want to continue to target those. The actual therapeutic area is less relevant for us. It's more of where they are located for use of these products. Account overlap is critical, and we'll be opportunistic on them moving forward. One of the common themes through all that, other than the efficiency, is going to be something that's very late term or already on the market. We're not looking for long-term R&D projects.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate the color.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this will conclude our question and answer session. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference back over to Vince Angotti for any closing remarks.
Thank you, operator, and thank you all for joining us today and for your continued support of AccelerX. We feel we're very well positioned for future growth, and we look very much forward to sharing more developments as they occur. So please be safe, and we look forward to giving you updates as they happen. Best.
The conference is now concluded, and we thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect your lines.